Yeah, Dragfest was definitely something that I looked forward to every year, and the whole campus seemed to look forward to it every year. Yeah. It was just, hey, Tika. It was just such a fun event and such a big event, and yeah, it was just a celebration, you know, and it was not about taking ourselves seriously, but it was just about having fun and being wild and fabulous. And I remember even, like, the fraternities and stuff, all the fraternity guys would come to Dragfest, and some of them would, like, put on a dress that didn't really fit them and put on a little makeup and be like, woohoo, we're going to Dragfest. And they were, most of them, probably super straight guys that had never, ever dabbled in drag at all, but they were just playing along because it was fun.
Yeah.
And so that's what I loved about the event, was just, it just made it not an issue. It just made it a good time for everybody. And yeah, it was great. Hey, Teek. One year I dressed up in drag and I took, like, I had some pretty serious theater makeup where you could make facial hair and you could make little beards and stuff. And so I made, like, a goatee and mustache and eyebrows and, you know, just went full drag and had a great, fun night. And then went home to my house in the outhouse that I shared with a girl named Emily. And I walked into our room where I live, you know, I live. I came home at the end of the night, and she screamed at the top of her lungs, and she was like, get out of my room! And she was, like, throwing pellets, because she thought it was some dude that was breaking into her bedroom. I was like, Emily, it's me, it's Chris, I'm so sorry, I just have a mustache on, I'm so sorry. She was terrified. Oh, man. So, apparently, I was pretty convincing in drag, because enough to scare somebody. Yeah, it was always a fun time.
Yeah, it sounds fun. I think it made a really big impact on a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of strong memories.
Yeah, yeah. It really was the biggest party of the year. I mean, it just was like Halloween and Dragfest are the two things you look forward to, so yeah.
That's a good question. You know, I think at the time it was interesting because we spent a lot of time throwing parties. We spent a heck of a lot of our time doing, like, party events, you know, that I recall. And, it's funny because now if I were to be in that group now, well, obviously I have a lot of different perspectives now being way further down the road, but at the time, I think, had it been now, we would have done more educational work. We would have, like, done more outreach. We would have been, you know, we didn't really do any of that sort of stuff, which I think at the time it was like just being there, being out, encouraging people to be out, to be seen, to celebrate queer culture, even though we weren't necessarily calling it that, felt really significant and felt really awesome. Like, oh, cool, awesome, you know, this is what we're doing. We're, like, really standing up. We're, like, sticking it to the man, you know. Even though, like, all we were doing was, like, throwing drag shows, you know. We were bringing in performers from other areas. We brought in performers from Portland a couple years in a row, a drag troupe that I was friends with at the time. And was like, oh, come on in, some professional performers from that area. And so, you know, we were bringing drag culture to campus. We were talking about it. We were showing movies. We were doing screenings. You know, we're trying to bring and support queer artists who, you know, musicians who are performing. So, you know, I think there are things that the Coalition Against Homophobia did that were really impactful and really helpful at the time. But yeah, looking back, it is, I think both true to the fact that we were, it was an undergraduate experience, but also this, the time of, like, yeah, throwing a party is, like, the most radical thing that we can do. Let's dye everyone's hair. We used to, like, wherever I was at, I knew that I'd have to book out, like, all my evenings, like, the week leading up to a dance, because people were like, let's dye my hair, like, crazy colors. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. You know, so it's always dyeing people's hair, doing crazy haircuts, and, like, this is going to be awesome, and just getting people really pumped and jazzed to get out there and kind of show themselves. And you know, it was that it felt really triumphant, and seeing people who'd never been comfortable with themselves before coming in and being like, hey, can you dye my, you know, guys coming in saying, hey, can you dye my hair pink? And, you know, I want to just be like really out there. I'll be like, all right, let's do it, man. Like, this is great. Or, you know.
Just kind of thinking about like Drag Fest and all the parties and stuff like that. I guess I was just wondering, like, it kind of seemed like Drag Fest is one of the only like trans, even like kind of adjacent things that was going on at Women for a long time. And
Oh,
just kind
yeah.
of like what you thought about Drag Fest and like maybe then versus now, but then also like, you know, how did Coalition like
Yeah.
address trans issues generally, if they did?
And I think there's, you know, my knowledge obviously about things has changed over time, and my understanding of things has shifted. You know, and I think at the time, I saw drag as this triumphant celebration of queerness, and more particularly folks like myself who weren't necessarily within a binary, that you could be fluid with how you present yourself, that you could, you know, go up on stage and you could be a man, and then you could come off stage and you could be a woman, or vice versa. It was this really crazy liberating concept at the time, especially with you know, rigid concepts of trans identity, I think, such limited concepts of trans identity, or as people would at the time say, quote unquote, really trans, you know, being real trans, right? Versus like being like, I don't know, I'm like, what, being play trans, like fake trans, like what? What was the alternative? But I mean, that's what people say, oh no, like real trans, you know, meaning like they've done hormones, they've done the surgery, you know, the surgery, whatever surgery that would be. You know, people didn't even really know, but folks were, you know, kind of coming up with this idea that, you know, this is what was required to be trans. And not everyone in the trans community obviously was buying into that, but some were enough to, I think, kind of replicate that misconception that was the only way to be trans. So meeting drag performers, and that was something that I had done in high school, even, you know, folks who were my age up in Portland, having gone up and seen them performing at all ages groups up there, I was like, holy crap, this is so cool. Like, you get to play with gender in a way that I've not seen, and it's respected in a way that I'd not seen, because it was in an all queer environment, right? Now, what we know is you take it out of an all queer environment, you bring it to a place like Whitman that's dominantly, you know, heteronormative in not just demographic, but actual construction as an institution. And things shift a little bit. All of a sudden, it can be more of the dude in a dress sort of concept, right? It's the freak show mentality. It's the, you know, we've got these folks here who it's maybe no longer as pure an expression of self-identity, and now it's instead this spectacle for a mainly cisgender heterosexual audience, right? And encourages folks to think that they can start co-opting drag culture in ways that it's totally offensive. You know, and it also, particularly for trans feminine individuals, trans women, saying, hey, look how easy it is, quote unquote, to be a woman. No, of course it's not easy. It's not. And being a drag queen is nothing like being a trans woman. It's just not the same. But people miss that nuance when you're in this primarily, you know, heteronormative environment like Whitman was, and I imagine still is. You know, so I think there were things. I was definitely part of that group that brought, you know, brought Drag Fest together and started doing that. Of like, all right, let's bring these drag performers in, because this will be this, you know, to me again, this kind of defiance in the face of societal, you know, conformity of like, no, like look at what we can do. We could totally buck these norms. We could be anything we want to be. Look at these phenomenal people performing, not really considering the ramifications of you know, the psychological impact that would have on my trans sisters, and not really thinking about the fact that you know, taken out of the context of a primarily queer environment in Portland and putting these performers in Walla Walla might be a little wild. They were having a ball. They were like, this is crazy shit. You know, they thought this was like wild living in Eastern Oregon or Eastern Washington. But it was probably in retrospect a little stupid in terms of safety. to have them out there. But they were like, this is great, this is defiant, like they wanted to do it and come out. And you know, at the time it felt really great, it felt awesome. And I think same thing with my argument with Leslie Feinberg about Queer Eye, is like any representation felt like some sort of visibility. And that was good. Of course, I think now the beauty of our society is that in many areas we get to be more selective now and say, hey, you know, yes, that's true. There's some types of representation that really play into and continue the marginalization of certain communities, and perhaps we should be careful and considerate about when and where we engage. You know, so little different. You're like, who knows? but yeah, you know, so I mean, I would imagine that. But, I mean, that's some of the things that I've seen on my own campus that I'm on. And I think also what I imagine is having the biggest impact on the community there is just the community itself ever evolving and changing and growing. You know, we've got so many letters now in our alphabet soup. You know, a yeah. lot of people add the plus because that just kind of helps out. But there's just so many ways to identify, so many more ways to identify now than there ever have been before. And people's understanding of those identities are so much higher than they've ever been before. And so I think that combination probably makes for a lot more unique issues than I ever saw or could have ever dreamt of when I was there, in terms of stuff that would have never crossed our minds as being problematic. Like, for instance, as you were asking me, this is, I think, a very minor example, but the drag course and the drag fest, like, what does that look like? And what does it look like to have, you know, cisgender heterosexual men dress up as women but leave their beards, right? And not in a gender bending reclaiming gender way, you know?
Yeah.
But rather in I'm a dude in a dress, let's laugh at me way. You know, and it's like those things, we were aware of that at a level, but we didn't really have a context to be thinking about that 20 years ago. Now we do. So I have to imagine there's so many more examples than that that are so much better that are now issues that we would never have even thought about. Which, like, if I were to go back now with the knowledge I have now, looking at in my experience, I'd be like, oh my gosh, of course that was an issue. Huge issues. You know, and we just never even had the awareness at the time. But so yeah, I mean, I think that's what happens when you just are bringing in more and more people who have a higher and higher level of awareness, education, experience, but also a wider and wider array of identities. You're going to find more and more areas of friction that need to be addressed. You know, they're problematic at the institutional level, and that's hard. Institutional change is exhausting. And what I guarantee is that the hidden labor components that, you know, student, staff, and faculty who are LGBTQ identified are carrying has not changed. I would guarantee that those are still, that weight is still sitting squarely on the shoulders of people from marginalized populations, including populations of color.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess. An educated guess if that is the case.
I'd say that's true.
So, I mean, like, Drag Fest to start with was obviously something that, like, had a lot of momentum behind it and a lot of tradition and excitement, and was a big coalition event each year. And also, like, I came into Whitman knowing that it was an event where people would mostly, like, straight cis guys would take advantage of wearing the most horrendous outfit they could come up with and being really as drunk as possible to, like, give an excuse for dressing the way that they did, and really in a lot of ways making a mockery of the event and the reason for having the event. So there was certainly a lot of discussion and coalition and a lot of work on our part to come up with a way to, like, honor the impetus behind Drag Fest and certainly the communities, you know, like, specifically for drag and for queer and trans communities to have this really celebratory an awesome event, but do it in a way that was a little less offensive or potentially offensive. So I'm trying to think. I know we ended up doing, we started making like DragFest the culmination of a week of programming and events and education on campus.
Yeah.
So that our goal was that, well, obviously, you know, it wouldn't be perfect. It would be more of an opportunity to let people know like what drag is and why it's really important and the history of drag, and educate people about the difference between drag and performance and transgender identities and also help people make better decisions about their actions, so that they, like, I'm sure that a lot of people didn't really think about how hurtful it might be for them to act and dress in the way that they did in preparing for a drag fest. And so being able to provide a little bit of education, and whether that was just some like social norming campaigns and posters and emails or whatever, if people weren't coming to sessions, usually if we had a big speaker, we try to plan it for that week also. So, you know, really trying to make it more of a community impact event, but it was not without its issues, that's for sure.
Yeah. There was a lot of debate around it from what I could find starting in the 2000s, so.
Yeah, we were squarely in it, for sure. I don't know, I think I came down pretty firmly on the side of, like, there's still a lot of value to having an event like this. If we can, like, I'd rather keep it going and make it into a more positive community impact than get rid of it.
Yeah.
And I, like, if I were to approach it now, I don't know if I'd feel the same way, but it felt like the thing to do, to just try to work with the resources at hand. So.
A few things to sort of start
wrapping
up, but just some really broad like thoughts. As someone who was like in and around like the Whitman community for a long time, like what do you think were like some of the big events or like shifts that you can remember that you feel like really had an impact on like the culture here? Just
That's a good question. I think some of the things we talked about earlier had a cumulative effect over time. It wasn't like the light just switched on one day. I think that the RA training, the sensitivity to sexual orientation that was consistently done for years and years and years, the work that Sharon did at the counseling center to help people who were struggling with coming out, having alumni involved, establishing the David Nord Award and publicizing that, you know, that was a big deal at first. It was, so building those traditions, DragFest, I don't know if you guys do DragFest anymore. It kind of reached at least in my time, it reached this pinnacle where it like had become too successful almost. And the LGBT students were questioning what the purpose is, because it had become such a huge social, it was almost like a big frat party, right? And so they started to actually scale it back because they felt like they'd lost control of the true meaning that was behind it initially. But I think those things, I don't see any big watershed moments, but I do see the steady cumulative building of some of these things and these traditions that have created the community that is here today.
I remember DragFest.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, was that... Oh, there was DragFest, and there was also the Tranny Road Show that came through. That had, like, Shauna Virago was the only name that I can remember from it, but we brought... there was, like, an artist troupe. There was one kid who juggled, and then a few singers and musicians that all identified as trans.
Huh. Don't think I heard about that.
Yeah, that happened. I forgot about it until just now. But that was a really cool performance and brought visibility to trans stuff. For DragFest, I felt like it was always pretty silly. I didn't necessarily identify it as a super queer space. It was more just like a gender play space.
Yeah.
But I also think that was a different group that organized that.
Yeah, that was Coalition Against Homophobia.
Coalition. Right. And I remember them existing, but I don't really remember the difference too much. I know that GLBTQ was more like support and social hangout, and that they were a little bit more activist-based.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the same people were involved in both. But I just know that I didn't plan any parties.
Yeah.
I remember going to DragFest and having a really good time. Maybe drinking too much and maybe wrestling with someone on the lawn out front. That might have happened. Hypothetically.
That's fun.
Yeah.